95.7 The Game, live and local. Now, it's Rick Tittle on 95.7 The Game.
All right, rise and shine. It is 9 o'clock on the button. Welcome to NFL Week 17. This is when we're going to wrap up the 2018 season, at least for the two teams around these parts. As we know, the Raiders and Niners will not be going to the playoffs, but they can do a little spoiling today. I am Rick Tittle, and I am live on location at Hooters in Dublin. You want to make sure you get out here today at some point. I'm going to be here. We got a three-hour show. I'll take you through Raiders pregame. We'll talk to Chris Townsend, who is live at Arrowhead in Kansas City. We'll all watch the game here. We'll come back with postgame. So I'm going to be here for 8 hours. Tittlepalooza, Hooterpalooza, come on down. 7944 Dublin Boulevard. It's right where 580 hits 680. You got two freeways. Maybe you're in Tracy. Maybe your name is Tracy. Get over here and get in on the great food deals, the beer, the chicken wings, all that great stuff. So, a lot to get to. Remember, at any point, I'd love to hear from you. Very caller friendly. 888-957-9570. Don't write it down. Dial it up. 888-957-9570. And you can always hit me up on the Chilton Auto Body text line at 957-95. Coming up in about 15 minutes, I'm going to talk to my friend Grace Terrill. She covers the Kansas City Chiefs for Sprott's Takes. She is the queen of Kansas City sports. We'll get her take on things. Gary Klein, he is the Rams beat writer for the Los Angeles Times. And we'll talk about the Niners and the Rams. That'll be at 10:15. And then our good buddy Anthony Slater does a great job for The Athletic covering the Golden State Warriors, who, do you call it a schneid when you lose two games in a row? I think we do around here. We kind of want our money back when the Warriors have the temerity to lose two games in a row. All was right in the world last night in Rip City, the Rose City, as the Warriors did beat Portland on their own court. So we'll talk to Anthony right around 11:15. And then, as I mentioned, at 11:45, we will begin Raiders pregame. We'll bring in Townie and everybody else, Brent Musburger, Lincoln Kennedy, as well, as we get ready for Week 17 action. So 888-957-9570 and the Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. A lot to play for in the National Football League. Now, sometimes people will say these are meaningless games. Every game is I always look at it this way. If you spend time watching a game, that is not meaningless. If you park your butt in front of a TV, if you go to a game, you'll never get that time back. I don't know if you believe in reincarnation. I don't. You'll never get that time back. Everything matters. And I'd like to hear from you what you think about what these teams need to do moving forward, and we're going to get into that as well. I'm of the mind, as I've seen so many drafts for so many years in the NFL and so many swings and misses, that it makes no sense to me to lose on purpose to move up a couple spots. I mean, do you want to pick number three again instead of five? Well, Khalil Mack was five. Solomon Thomas was three. It's an inexact science. And yes, I'd rather have the higher pick, but not at the cost of losing games. I just don't think that's healthy. Now, some people disagree with me. They think, no, lose every... I don't know how you root for your team to lose games. If you're going to live forever, if you're a vampire, I appreciate that. But a meteor might hit the earth. If I'm watching my team, I want them to win. Let's go over some of the playoff scenarios around the NFL. In the NFC, it's a little more cut and dried. New Orleans is the only team of all 32 National League football teams that has clinched the number one seed regardless of what happens. Do you want to play Drew Brees at all in this game? I don't think you do. You might remember when Donald Penn gave up one sack the entire year, Derek Carr broke his leg. Yeah, it's a horrible memory. My point is, don't even put the guy in there for a series. Wayne. So the Saints are sitting pretty. The road to the Super Bowl in the NFC goes through the Crescent City. Then we get to the Rams. And yes, of course, they're in at 12-3. They can be a 2. Or they can be a 3. All the Rams have to do is just beat the 49ers and they get a bye. If the Rams lose to the 49ers and the Bears beat the Vikings, which I think will happen because the Bears need to play for something more in a second, then the Niners could force the Rams to play an extra game. When you get a bye in the playoffs, it is not just a bye. It is literally a playoff victory. When you get a bye during the season, of course, I always think that's a communist plot just to make the NFL season 17 weeks. I know when my team has a bye, my interest in football goes down to about from 100% to 1%. But when you get a bye in the playoffs, you move on to the next round. You say, yeah, I know. It's not just that simple. You move on. You only have to win two games to go to the Super Bowl. So the Niners would love to do that. You think about the Rams. You think about through the 70s when the Rams tortured the 49ers year in, year out. And they started getting some Rams talent. Hacksaw Reynolds, Wendell Tyler. And then the Niners, the Joe Montana era, they sort of flip things. But the Niners would love nothing more than to do that. The Rams, though, and we'll see. Gurley's not going to play. We'll see what's up with Goff. The Chicago Bears are in at 11-4. They can get a bye if they beat the Vikings and the Rams lose to the 49ers. As I just mentioned, they'll be the number three seed if the Rams win. And if the Rams win, it doesn't matter what they do, they will be the three seed. The Cowboys are in. They are the number four seed, end of story, which I think is pretty hilarious. It doesn't matter what happens. The Cowboys could be 10-6. They could be 9-7. And they are the fourth seed. It's pretty hilarious. The Seahawks are also in. They will be a 5 or a 6. It's basically beat the Cardinals. There are 5. Lose to Cardinals. And Vikings beat Bears. Then they'll be 6. So it looks like the Seahawks have a pretty good grip on the fifth position. Two teams that are on the outside looking in but have a shot. The Minnesota Vikings. They can be a 5 or a 6. The Vikings obviously need to beat the Bears. They need the Seahawks to lose to the Cardinals to get to 5. But the more likely scenario is if the Vikings beat the Bears and then the Seahawks win. The last team that is outside looking in are your world champion Philadelphia Eagles, who suffered through the Super Bowl hangover, which we get a lot of times. You have your first ever parade through the town. It's hard to get that hunger back sometimes, but the only shot the Eagles have of getting to the playoffs is that the Eagles, with a little Nick Foles late season magic, they have to beat the Washington Redskins, and then the Bears have to beat the Vikings. And as I just said, the Bears going for a bye, I think that will happen. So I think you will see your Philadelphia Eagles, yes, you Philly fan, your Eagles back into the playoffs. So now let's get to the AFC, which is crayfish. The Chiefs are the number one seed, but they could go to 5. We could see a wild card game of Kansas City versus New England, which I think would make a lot of Raider fans happy because that would mean one of those teams would lose. But the easiest thing for the Chiefs to do is to just beat the Raiders, of which they're about a 2-touchdown favorite. If they just beat the Raiders at Arrowhead, and that's easier said than done, and I can go back in history. We will do that throughout this show in the Raiders pregame, talking about times where the Raiders have pulled a spoiler. Now, remember, if you are playing a spoiler role, that's because your season is already spoiled. But there's no doubt that I feel some very warm vibes of schadenfreude whenever teams I hate miss the playoffs or maybe have to go on the road. So the Chiefs, their eyes are on the prize. Any notion of resting Patrick Mahomes will only happen if they get to a blowout. If the Chiefs, this is how the Chiefs can go all the way down to 5. They have to lose, the Chargers have to win, and then they're the 5th seed. That's pretty scary for them. Now, the Patriots, they are in. They can get the number one seed if they win and the Raiders win. They can drop down to 4 and host a first week game. And remember, in the Tom Brady era, Tom Brady has, I should say, every time they've gone to a Super Bowl, he has never had to play that first week. They've always had that little fortnight of sitting back and watching the games on TV. So if the Patriots lose and the Titans, Texans, and Ravens win, then they go to 4. The Texans, they are in the playoffs at 10-5. They actually have a shot at the number one seed, but it's going to be a long shot. They have to win. Raiders have to beat the Chiefs. The Chargers have to lose. The Patriots have to lose as well. The Texans can also fall to the 6th seed. They have to lose to Jacksonville at that point. The Texans cannot catch the Chargers or the Chiefs, so they would be the 6th seed. And then if the Colts and Titans do not end in a tie, it would be it. The Ravens are at 9-6. They actually, at 9-6, they have a shot to be the second seed and get a bye. How is that possible? This is why the AFC is so crazy. They can get the bye in two ways. They have to win. Patriots, this will be a test at the end. Get your abacus ready. The Ravens win, obviously. Patriots lose. Texans lose. Colts-Titans does not end in a tie. They can fall all the way to 6, and this is a pretty wild situation. If the Steelers win and the Ravens tie the Browns, Pittsburgh would win the division and thus be the fourth seed. That would be pretty amazing. The Chargers at 11-4 can get the number one seed, and they have to win, and the Raiders have to beat the Chiefs. So for me, as a lifelong Raider fan, the only bad thing about beating the Chiefs is you might be handing the Chargers the number one seed. They can also fall to 5, and this is probably where the Chargers are going to be at 5, and that is just if the Chiefs win, then the I want to say San Diego. I'll just be saying San Diego the rest of my life. The Los Angeles Chargers would go to 5. Finally, a few more teams trying to get in at the end here. The Colts can go anywhere from 3-6, but they're not in right now. They have to beat the Titans. The Texans lose. The Ravens lose. The Steelers win. The Tennessee Titans. Will Marcus Mariota throw another touchdown to himself at Arrowhead? Do you know the Titans have a chance at the 2 seed? It's crazy. They have to beat the Colts. Texans lose. Patriots lose. Ravens lose. Chargers lose. Chiefs lose. And finally, the Pittsburgh Steelers at 8-6-1, they are on the outs right now. They can be a 4 or a 6. I talked about how they can be a 4 to be the last seed. They have to beat the Bengals, and the Colts and Titans does have to end in a tie. So as you play 17 weeks, and this tells you about how many times these games are important. Listen, every Major League Baseball game is important, as we've seen in the wild card era. And you talk about the NFL, every game is certainly very, very important. All right, we'll take a quick break. On the other side, Gracie Terrell will join us from Kansas City. She'll talk about what's going on with the Chiefs. I'm Rick Tittle, live at Hooters. Right now, there's one guy here. That's all right. It's 9:12. It'll start filling in. They turned the heat on. It's starting to heat up. 7944 Dublin Boulevard. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back. 95.7. The game.
Now back to 95.7, The Game.
Thank you so much, Rick Tittle, with you live from Hooters, Dublin, 7944 Dublin Boulevard. We'll be here all day. We got Raiders pregame coming up officially. We'll get to Chris Townsend, Brent Musburger, and Lincoln Kennedy from Arrowhead Stadium as Week 17 will conclude. It's time now to bring in the queen of Kansas City sports talk. Whenever anything happens in the last 5 or 6 years with the Royals or the Chiefs, I always talk to my good friend Grace Terrell. She is GAT, G-A-T. She runs Sprott's Takes back there. Yes, not Sports Takes, but Sprott's Takes. And, GAT, I know that as a Chiefs fan your whole life, you have been I don't know if the word tricked is right, but you always feel like, hey, this is our season, and then you go to the playoffs and Mariota throws a touchdown pass to himself. The reason I think this could happen again is because the Chiefs' defense is, and I'm not being overboard, it's so garbage. Can they, we saw Oklahoma try to do it last night, can they just win by outscoring the other team? Because they certainly have a great offense.
We've definitely done it this season. It just comes down to, can we actually rely on Mahomes to carry our team in the playoffs? And that's something that we don't know yet. Our defense is absolutely garbage. And thank you for reminding me about that Tennessee game. You know, I have been going to therapy for the last year trying to forget it. So I appreciate that one.
I remember when you guys drafted Mahomes, I asked you about, you know, trading up, and there were some question marks. There was no doubt the guy had a golden arm, great pedigree with his dad in the bigs. And I remember you telling me that you were absolutely over the moon. You were sold on this kid, and, man, you were right.
It's nice to be right every once in a while, but, you know, being able to see him transition from the quote-unquote overrated Big 12 air raid offense and bring that kind of flavor to Kansas City, it's honestly one of the most impressive things I've ever seen. And, you know, I wasn't born the last time that the Chiefs drafted a quarterback. So it's really cool to see that system from the ground up, especially with a mastermind like Andy Reid.
You know, it's funny because when Kareem Hunt had his situation go down, a lot of people thought, oh, this is really going to unbalance things. What is Spencer Ware going to do? Are they going to lead on Tre'Quendre West? Damian Williams has done so well, they've locked him into a tune to $8 million, which probably takes you guys out of the Le'Veon Bell sweepstakes. I bet you there are a few Chiefs fans that are actually glad they're not in the Le'Veon Bell sweepstakes. But how good has that kid been?
He's been incredible. I mean, just watching him step up to the plate, so to speak, in the last few games, he's just been unstoppable, it seems like. And Mahomes, once he finds a guy like that to really rely on, to hand off the ball to and to just get these touchdowns, it's nice because Mahomes, with Mahomes, everything's a weapon, let's be honest. So this kid just is in the prime time, and honestly, Kansas City needed it. Spencer Ware being hurt and obviously Kareem Hunt being gone definitely was a concern, but we've bounced back better than ever, except on defense.
What would you say, Gat? I mean, we all watch Patrick Mahomes, and if there's anything you could say, well, if there's a weakness, you know, maybe an overconfidence issue, but I don't see him forcing too many passes in bad situations. He doesn't have horrifyingly high interception numbers. Outside of just his youth and inexperience, as with any player playing in his second year in the league, what would you say if you were scheming against him, how you would attack that offense?
Man, that is a really good question because he doesn't have many weaknesses at all. I think his voice is the weirdest thing about him. People in Kansas City have called him fraud. National media certainly picked up on that. But honestly, our O-line is his biggest weakness. If we had a strong, healthy O-line, then, you know, he'd be almost unstoppable.
You know, I look at the tight end position, and the Raiders for the last few years have had their problems on defense, to say the least. But one of them, even when they did have the Khalil Macks of the world, you could not guard tight ends. And Travis Kelce is one of the best in the business. He can be a little annoying at times, but he certainly backs up what he does on the field. I know Sammy Watkins is out today. That was a nice little piece that the Chiefs added. Where would you be without Kelce? Because I think about, you know, a Demetrius Harris or a Deion Yelder and an Alex Ellis. I mean, this guy really makes things go from the Y spot.
I think Kelce is probably one of the greatest things on offense that have happened to the Chiefs since, I mean, Tyreek Hill has been great too. But Kelce has honestly been one of the most reliable receivers for Patrick Mahomes. And he's an incredible guy. I think he has like 54 yards to gain today in order to break the NFL season record. So I'm excited to see what that guy's going to do. I mean, he's got a lot of time left on him. And everyone in Kansas City loves the guy.
You know what? George Kittle, no relation, of the 49ers might be breaking it, too. It's a pretty big game for those two guys. A couple more questions for Grace Terrell of Sprotstakes in Kansas City. Eric Fisher, number one overall pick, left tackle. A lot of times, you know, fans don't like it. It's not a sexy pick. But if you can park a guy there and have him go to the Pro Bowl for 10 years, it is the smart thing to do. His rookie year, a few years ago, he looked like, I'm not going to say a bust, but he looked like he was going to be average. This year, he's really shown why the Chiefs has taken him. What about his career so far, the ups and downs for Eric Fisher?
I think the biggest highlight and what really sold me on him was that playoff game against Houston. He absolutely dominated J.J. Watt, and that was something that's really hard to do, obviously. People have tried, and it's not very easy. But I was completely annoyed, to say the least, with that. You know, of course, the Chiefs get the number one overall pick a year that there's really not much to go with. But he's proven his worth over time. I've been his number one critic. You know, I've been very vocal about how much I can't stand the guy. But this year, he's definitely stepped up. But honestly, that game, the playoff game where he shut down J.J. Watt, that was just beautiful right there.
You know, when I look at the defense, and on paper, when you talk about Houston and Ford and Ragland at backer, when Eric Berry, I know he's questionable today, but Eric Berry, when he's healthy, you kind of think, how can this defense be so bad? Is it just the defensive line just melts?
You know, Bob Sutton, that's the number one thing that I would have to say. Bob Sutton has been a really big pain for Chiefs fans over the years. And I don't know if we put that on Bob Sutton or Andy Reid for keeping him around for so long, but not being able to coach the talent that we do have, you know, what little we have left after injuries, that is definitely something that falls directly on Bob Sutton. So I wouldn't be surprised today if it was just an all-out, just offensive game. You know, I'm a big fan of Derek Carr under Gruden. I don't know what kind of system Gruden is doing. I don't know if he has a system, if he's just kind of winging it. But Derek Carr has actually been playing a lot better than I thought he was going to this year under Gruden. So I think it's just going to be an all-out offensive battle.
You know, you might not know this in Kansas City, and a lot of people don't even know this in Oakland, because whenever you're a quarterback and you lose, you get too much blame. And sometimes, as we know, when you win, you get too much credit. But Derek Carr, the most completions in NFL history through five seasons. You look at the first 5 years of Peyton Manning, he threw 100 interceptions. Derek Carr has thrown 52 interceptions. The problem with the Raiders is not Derek Carr. And you talk about multiple head coaches, multiple coordinators. I never really use that as a huge excuse, but it is something to be mentioned. So, yeah, Derek Carr, to me, Gruden has not burned this team to the ground just yet. If he gets rid of Carr and tries to take a rookie, to me, that would be the end. But when you, not just Derek Carr, as you look at the Raiders and you know what a dysfunctional, disappointing season it's been in their last season in Oakland, who are some of the guys that you look at that you want to exploit and maybe think we have to watch out for that guy?
You know, I can't really pinpoint a single player. I just think that the Chiefs have so many weaknesses that Gruden is smart enough to figure out. I know that Gruden versus Andy Reid isn't really an exploitation of sorts, but I think Gruden, if anyone, knows how to play sneaky. And, you know, you look at his Super Bowl win, that was sneaky. And he's just a coach that you can't really, put on the back burner and be like, it's just the Raiders. This is a game that a lot of fans are looking at like, oh, we're going to lose, including my dad, who's the ultimate pessimist. But still, you know, he's like, oh, I think this was a trap game. We don't have anything to lose. We're already in the playoffs. Raiders, this could potentially be basically their Super Bowl.
Well, you think about, I want to say 99, was it 98? Gunther Cunningham, head coach at Arrowhead, all the Chiefs had to do was win that game and they were in. And he had that barefoot kicker, John Baker, on the roster just for kickoffs. He kicked it out of bounds twice, and the game ended at OT with Joe Nedney. This is before the Raiders drafted Janikowski, kicking the field goal and knocking the Chiefs out. We just talked about last year. We know under Marty Schottenheimer, he'd have fantastic regular season teams, and they would lay an egg. So is it just kind of a gallows humor? Are Chiefs fans kind of like Cubs fans? It's like you have to actually win it, and then we'll believe you?
I mean, there's a reason that we consume so much alcohol during football season. You just have to, like, almost brace yourself for it. We could be up by 28, like, against the Colts, and then completely have that go to waste. So it's just like, we're never safe. Until there's a 100-point lead and there's 2 seconds left, that's when I feel safe as a Chiefs fan.
You would need a 100-point lead with 2 seconds left.
Yes, 100%.
It's funny because growing up in my house, I would watch the Raider game with two of my brothers, and we'd almost have to go to different rooms so we wouldn't kill each other out of frustration and interceptions and things. But my little brother would not high-five me until it said final. Even if everybody was walking on the field and the Raiders were leading by 20 and the clock was ticking down, he's like, no, it's not over yet. There's just something about that, especially, I don't know, when the Royals finally, I mean, you think about 1985, nothing your whole life, and then you lose the World Series in Game 7 at home, and you win it the next year. Does that, and you might think, well, it's two different sports, but it's the same fan base. Does that give Chiefs fans hope, that Royals victory?
It really did, because we looked at them and we're like, these people couldn't even get into the postseason for 30 years. Like, why can't the Chiefs just win a Super Bowl? I mean, there's only, 32 teams. We got to get it at one point, right? And, you know, that's kind of like the hope that we have. And with Patrick Mahomes coming back, he's kind of our superstar. Just like that entire Royals team is always going to be remembered very, very, very fondly.
I would imagine in the draft, regardless of what happens, if you get knocked out of the first round or you win the Super Bowl, it's going to be six rounds of defense and then maybe a seventh round quarterback to back up instead of Chad Henne. Maybe something like that for you guys?
I definitely think so. I think if we do anything besides build up our defense in the draft, Brett Veach is going to get an ear licking, to say the least.
Who would you? A couple more questions for Grace Terrell, Sprouts Takes, Kansas City. Who would you say on defense? Because I know you're a big fan of Dee Ford, and I mentioned how you know Justin Houston was so good for so long. We know about Eric Berry.
Mm-hmm.
Who on that defense, one or two guys, is not a national name that even though as a group you guys aren't very good, you really like that guy?
You know, Steven Nelson's been stepping up a lot more lately. You know, Daniel Sorensen is a guy that I think we call him the Flying Dutchman. I can't keep up with all the names, but he's like blonde.
Well, he's Danish.
Danish. There we go. So yeah. I should call him the Flying Danish.
S-E-N. I know because I'm Danish. If the name ends S-E-N, it's Danish. Anyway, like, continue.
No, I'm glad I can correct myself. The Flying Danish sounds cooler anyways. But he's been absolutely fun. But you see him on the street, and he's just this blonde, average-looking kid. He doesn't look like anything, but you get him on the field, and he's pretty dangerous.
Is that a knock on BYU?
No comment.
All right, and finally, tell people more about your organization there and how the last 5 years you've kind of taken over that town.
Yeah, Sprouts Takes has been on airwaves of ESPN Kansas City. We are now on iHeartRadio. We're actually launching Monday, Wednesday, Friday full-time. We'll be going podcasting, and we're going to be going live from my basement studio, which is kind of awesome. No commute. But SproutsTakes.com has started off as a blog where I could just kind of talk crap about the sports teams, and I ended up adding a bunch of people on. My co-founder, Megan Cosby, she's been absolutely instrumental in building this. But we've had a billboard in Kansas City. I was the first female sports radio in Kansas City. And that's a pretty big honor to have because, you know, growing up listening to those guys, it's pretty cool to get into the old boys club. But, you know, we're not trying to pride ourselves on being female. We're sports fans, and we like to talk crap about sports, and so does everybody else. But it's the lighter side of it. That's always way more fun.
Len Dawson, George Brett, Grace Terrell, in that order. Gracie, thanks for your time, as always, the Notorious GAT with Sprott's Takes, and we'll all talk to you in spring training about the Royals.
Sounds great. Thank you.
All right. Very good. That's Grace Terrell out there in Kansas City. And, yes, they say Sprott's Takes. The whole thing was when they started is that, oh, since we're girls, we don't know how to say sports. We can't even spell it. We say Sprott's. I told her that wasn't a good idea. I thought that, but she was right, and she's doing really well. Lines are open, and as we go through the day, and we'll get to the Raiders pregame officially right around 11:45. It's going to be all Raider talk. We still need to talk about what's going on with the 49ers, and we're going to do that with Gary Klein coming up in about 45 minutes. He's a beat writer with the LA Times. We are going to get into some more dub talk right around 11:15 with Anthony Slater about the Warriors getting that victory in Portland. Klay Thompson playing very well. Everybody could sleep well last night. Since Klay Thompson doesn't stink, in quotes, anymore, I wasn't worried, but still it feels good to have him back. But I just want to know from Raider fans out there, what are you looking for outside of a victory today, and maybe, as I mentioned, some of you want them to lose because you figure, what's the deal? We'd rather move up in the draft. I know the Raiders can go anywhere from, you know, 2-9, 3-9, whatever. As far as I'm concerned, I would much rather see the Kansas City Chiefs take one on the chin. And see the Raiders go into the offseason with a great feeling of that Monday night game in Oakland and then winning at Arrowhead. I think that would really, you might think momentum would stop after a couple weeks. Maybe it will. I think that winning mentality, I've been in the locker room in Oakland after a win, and it's like a funeral parlor. And I've been there after, or I should say after a loss. After a win, the music's blaring, everybody's having a good time, jocularity, the dish ran away with the spoon, a lot of fun and games. Derek Carr, as he was coming up, I was in the tunnel, and he would stay in late on that Monday night game in the rain. And he was doing the Cal Ripken tour through the black hole. He came up, and there some security guy goes, "Watch out for Derek." So I got out of the way, and as he ran into the Raider locker room, he jumped and he slapped the wall above the door, kind of like the play like a champion Notre Dame thing. Why? Because that kid, he loves football. He loves winning. He's so fired up. for me to even think, nah, man, lose this game. It's better for us. If you could, somebody called me the other night when I was on with Herbs and said, I think he was talking about the Niners, why they need to lose. And he said they need to lose today so they can make the playoffs next year. Well, if you could guarantee me that, then yeah, lose. Lose today. If you're going to lose to get into the playoffs next year, absolutely. Don't even just roll an empty helmet out there and say we forfeit. I would do that. But there's no way you can tell me that can work. And for me, I'm not going back to black and white film. I'm just thinking about the last couple of drafts. Khalil Mack was 5. Solomon Thomas was 3. Solomon Thomas wasn't a bad pick. Remember, John Lynch got an A-plus after that draft. We were all singing his praises. I was one of them. Oh, my gosh, not only did you get Solomon Thomas, you got back in to get Reuben Foster. Wow, the best linebacker in the draft. Screw the red flags. And then the Bears, that guy Pace in Chicago, what a schmuck. He thinks Trubisky, who got beat out twice as a Tar Heel, played 1 year in Chapel Hill. He thinks he'll be good. And so the Bears got a D and the Niners got an A. Well, where would you rather be right now? Now, I know the Niners have Jimmy G, but most teams would say, would you rather have Solomon Thomas and have Reuben Foster be on the Redskins roster, or would you rather have Mitchell Trubisky? This is why when we give these grades the next day, everybody is like, oh, you won, you lost. And there's no way you can suss that out, even after a year. And when the Raiders drafted Jamarcus Russell number 1 overall, there are a lot of people who either weren't alive then, weren't paying attention then, or who are revisionists who think that Al Davis made some sort of maverick-like rogue move. Like, no, 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 I know better than everyone else. I'm Al Davis. I'll take him. No. The whole nation, every scout signed off on that guy. The Mel Kuypers of the world. We saw him torch Notre Dame in the Sugar Bowl for LSU, throwing to Dwayne Bowe. Everyone. Now, I guess we didn't figure out just how lousy Notre Dame was. Speaking of that, how about yesterday? We'll get into college football in the next segment. But the whole deal with Russell was that he was Byron Leftwich, except more athletic. You know, he was going to be the size of a tackle with a golden arm. Everyone signed off on it. So people say, oh, Al Davis, what an idiot. No, no, no. Every scouting service, what an idiot. It was a bust. There's no doubt. All right. Let's go to Manuel, who's right out here in Dublin. What's up, Manuel?
Hey, what's up, man? Happy New Year. Hope 2019 is good for all of us, man. Hey, I feel your passion because I'm an East Bay guy, born in Oakland. Lived in Dublin my whole life, and I feel your passion as a Raiders, and it's you know, part of it is, you know, at the end of the era. But with this today's game, you know, I would love to see us knock the Chiefs out. Although I hate the Broncos more than any team in the world, I hate the Broncos. That's like the top two teams: Broncos, and Giants and Niners, who I hate. But you know, I like this, but it's kind of hard to put lipstick on a pig, man. We've had an ugly season, and my question, long story short, is, I don't know if DC is a winner. I thought at the beginning of the season I had us at 7 to 8 wins, and I thought the whole thing was going to come down to Derek Carr. And now I look at his frame as a body. I think he is kind of a smaller guy when you see him out there. So what's your take? What's your official take going in 2019? What do you expect from Derek Carr? Will we get his option in 2000? I think it's May of or March, whatever it comes up next year. Is DC a winner?
Thank you for the call, Manuel. I appreciate it. Couple things here. The whole thing about winner, I hate. Winner to me is usually a pejorative, or it's a compliment when you can't really put a label on a guy. It's like usually Notre Dame quarterbacks like Tony Rice or Ron Paulus. What can you say about the guy? Oh, he's a winner. He's a winner? Well, it's a team sport. Derek Carr, by the way, is signed for $75 million for the next 3 years. He's going into his third year of $125. Derek Carr is not Aaron Rodgers. I'm not saying he's Aaron Rodgers. But if you want to go ahead and look at the chasm, at the desert island that was in between Gannon and Carr, do you really want to go back there? Do you think that the Raiders' problem is Derek Carr? Listen, when Peyton Manning was the number 1 overall pick, right? And then he was the unanimous MVP a couple years after that. He threw exactly 16 interceptions that year. That's one per game. So I always say I'll give my quarterback one per game. But you can't even give that to Carr. Peyton Manning threw his first 5 years in the league threw 100 interceptions. Derek Carr's thrown 52. Derek Carr has the most completions of anyone in NFL history through his first 5 years. Now, that means he has to start from day one, obviously, but a lot of guys have. Now, you'd say, well, it's all dink and dunk. Not true. Derek Carr's average attempt is 13th in 32 leagues. That's not even top 10 for shortest. So you can't say it's all dink and dunk. I think about a guy his teammates absolutely adore and love. They love that guy. I think about a natural-born leader. I think about a guy who doesn't snap. And we saw that when he started his career 0-10. I am not trying to put Derek Carr in the Hall of Fame. I am not trying to say Derek Carr is perfect. And I'm not going to say he doesn't frustrate me, because every professional athlete frustrates us at some times. But if you really think that you want to jump off this boat and go back into the middle of the ocean again, that ocean which Raider fans floated on like Papillon on a bunch of mangoes, do you really want to float around in the ocean like that again for another 20 years and have these old schmucks and these overhyped college rookies come in? Would you have wanted Josh Rosen? Would you have wanted Sam Darnold? Would you have wanted Josh Allen? Those guys are all, they can't hold Derek Carr's jock, and they won't in the next 5 years either. So the Raiders have the most important player on their team, the quarterback position. They have that position solved. He's not perfect, but I believe that 80% of the league would trade you whoever they have for Derek Carr. So is he a winner? I don't care about that adjective or that description. All I care is that I know what it's like, and every Raider fan does. They know what it's like when you have a clown at quarterback and the Raiders don't. We'll take a break. I'm Rick Tittle, live at Hooters in Dublin. We'll come on back, 95.7 again.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Thank you so much. Rick Tittle with you live from Hooters in Dublin. And if you want to know the street, it's Dublin. It's the biggest city in the world because every day it's Dublin. 7944 Dublin Boulevard, right as 580 and 680 converge. I'm going to be here all the way through the end of the Raider game. And then after that, they're going to set up a little cot in the back, and I'm going to spend the night. Come on down to Hooters, or as they say down south, come on down to Hooters. And, of course, you can be a part of the show. This segment is all about y'alls and your calls, so get in the queue. We'll talk to you at 888-957-9570. Once again, 888-957-9570. We're going to switch over to the Niners in about a half hour and talk to Gary Klein, who covers the Rams for the L.A. Times. And we'll see about, as the Niners try to spoil things for the Rams, and they would love nothing better to do than that. Let's take a look at the Chilton Auto Body text line, which you can get in at 95795. 415 is a Raider fan who's rooting very hard for them to lose today. He thinks it's best for the future. I disagree with that. I think that's stupid, and I think if you root for your team to lose, you've never really watched a lot of football in your life. You haven't lived through a lot of drafts. I would probably say you are young because you think that draft picks are like pieces of gold. It's like someone said, oh, you know, Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper. Okay, so you can take those first-round picks. You want Gerrion Conley and Carl Joseph and Colton Miller. You know, it's like, is that what you're going to get for Amari Cooper and Khalil Mack? Ooh, what a good trade. I'm sorry, I'm not in with that. So this Raider fan, the 415, rooting very hard for the Raiders to lose. 510, it's Dana. Dana is a huge fan in Oakland. She said, I want the Raiders to win so badly because this might be the last game I'll even root for them. Unless they play next year at the Coliseum, this is it for me. So I want them to go out and crush the Chiefs on a high note. Yeah, it was sad Monday night. I was there, and I grew up at that Coliseum, and, you know, my parents, Oakland natives, and My dad had season tickets. My dad was an Oaks fan. My dad's about as Oakland as it gets. It's the reason why I'm an Oakland fan. A's, Raiders, Warriors, and my Sharkies. But, you know, I try to take a more philosophical look at things. And the philosophical look is that all things in life are temporary, not to be a fatalist or morbid or macabre. But let's just enjoy what we have in front of us. We do get one more Oakland Raider game. Somebody was asking me, are they going to be called the Oakland Raiders next year? I would assume so, but I shouldn't make such assumptions. Will they be the San Francisco Raiders of Las Vegas? I highly doubt that, but the way the NFL has screwed up this whole situation, you could have a San Francisco team not called San Francisco, and you could have a Santa Clara team called San Francisco. Try to rattle that around in your cranium for a little while. That's if the Raiders play at AT&T Park. As Dana said, she won't root for them unless they're at the Coliseum. To me, the one that's going to sting the most, and people will say, oh, you'll get a lot of fans down there. It would really sting if they played in San Diego next year. But just because that to me makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. It would be like if all of a sudden Eisenhower said, you know what, I think I'm going to do a little Benedict Arnold here, and I'm going to like try to keep the Atlantic Wall here intact with Fortress Europe. Yeah, it would be a little bit bizarre, to say the least. But it's all speculation at this point. I mean, they vary. What if they play at Sam Boyd Stadium? They probably won't. It's not an NFL stadium. They could start calling themselves Las Vegas next year. That's all, as I mentioned, conjecture and speculation. We don't know if that's going to happen. What we do know is that today the Oakland Raiders are playing the Kansas City Chiefs, something they've done since 1960. And I think about, you know, the earlier caller, Manuel, said he hates the Broncos the most. I understand that. For me, Broncos, Chiefs, Chargers, I still hate the Seahawks from their AFC West days. I still consider the Seahawks an AFC West team, just because it's so ingrained in my DNA. That's one thing I think the Bay Area is united about, is their hatred for the Seahawks when you think about how the Niners play them twice a year as well. But as I said, wherever they're going to be, we do have this game today. We have this game today, a game that I think would be fantastic if the Raiders could win and make Kansas City play an extra week. Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. Rick, can you repeat that car speech? I got some buddies that need to hear you preach. That was beautiful. Anybody who knows what they're watching, no cars, the best player on the team. Listen to the replay. You can hear that speech again, but I appreciate it. 925. I fully understand the wanting to lose, and if they do lose, I won't be upset and I'll embrace the draft pick. But if the game is on the line, there's no way in hell I'm going to be rooting for the Chiefs. That's the way I feel. I mean, if the Raiders lose, and they probably will. I mean, let's face it, they're playing the number one seed in the whole AFC at one of the most difficult places to play. I would love to see them spoil it, but that's a little silver lining, is that your draft position. I don't put silver linings first. From the 415, people fail to realize that a lot of these players are playing for their roster spots and can't afford to slough off and blow a game. Those people are nonsensical. Yeah, they are nonsensical, as I said. But I think it's because people who have not seen a lot of drafts in their life, they think that every pick that goes up, that player is better. If you ever talk to anyone in Italy, they have this thing where anyone to the south of you is worse than you, all the way down to Sicily, even though in Sicily they're in the sunshine and everybody else in northern Italy is in the rain and the snow. I think the people who want the Raiders and the Niners to lose today are people who haven't seen a lot of football in their lives, and they think whoever the fifth overall pick is way better than the sixth, and then continue that all the way down to Mr. Irrelevant. I mean, all you got to do is look at the draft I was talking about with John Lynch when he had Solomon Thomas and Mitchell Trubisky, or I should say the Mitchell Trubisky trade, and then getting Reuben Foster. How many people were talking about George Kittle? You know, fifth-round pick, and you go, oh, this tight end, he looked pretty good playing for Iowa. In fact, the guy they just drafted before that, C.J. Beathard, was his quarterback. That's one of those deals, and you figure you went out to scout C.J. Beathard. Who did he throw to? He threw to that guy. You know, that's how Dwight Clark got discovered. It was at Steve Fuller at Clemson throwing to him. That's how A lot of guys have been discovered. Throw to that guy. I mean, Aaron Rodgers at Butte College in Chico, Tedford went up to see the tight end who he brought in, and Aaron Rodgers is throwing to him. And Tedford knew enough to say, I'll give you a two-year ride right now if you sign. I love it when somebody can suss out that type of situation. Let's go to the Penske, or I should say the Chilton Autobody text line, 95795. 925 says, if we have Carr, then we have hope. You have to keep Carr and build around him. Another guy continues on to say that I have to root against the Raiders. It's good for the future. Okay, that's fine. You can go that way as well. All right, let's talk a little bit about what went down last night. Last night in the college football playoffs, and I was saying the other day, there's been a lot of times where I have not made the college football playoffs must-see TV. You know, college football to me is not life and death. I play college football. I love college football. But there are a lot of times when you kind of think, I know who's going to win, or it's like a matchup you've seen before. I was very interested yesterday. Very, very interested. I had Tottenham Wolves in the morning. That didn't go very well. But both of these games turned out to be very disappointing. Notre Dame, with that defense, I thought they were given a little bit of a disrespectful line. What was it, about 11 or 12? As it turned out, the Gamblers knew exactly what they were doing. That kid, Trevor Lawrence for Clemson, looks like Jeff Spicoli. He kind of looks like maybe Edgar Winters or backup bassist or maybe somebody who would be like a Kelly Leet type of guy. But Notre Dame didn't show up. And it's funny because Brian Kelly after the game said, this isn't really a choke when you think about it. Oh, it wasn't a choke. Okay. And then Kyler Murray show. As an A's fan, I like Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray, I was rooting for Kyler Murray. I was hoping that he would be able to win that game. I had no fear in him turning to the NFL. If he did, more power to him. And people have asked me, you know, why wouldn't he go in the draft? Well, first of all, I don't think I've ever seen Kyler Murray look smaller. I know he's only 5'9". He's listed at 5'10", but he's 5'9". He looked like he was about 5'2" in that game. He was the Texas Football Player of the Year in a state where football is the religion. He was 42-0, three state championships. We know he had to transfer to get to Oklahoma, just like Mayfield did, back-to-back Heisman's, pretty cool. But if there's an NFL team that spends a pick on him, and I think somebody will, it won't be Heim. But remember when the Raiders took a shot at Bo Jackson, they threw in a little pick late and said, just in case he ever wants to play football, let's just go ahead and get the rights on Bo Jackson. And we know how that turned out. So somebody will. Now, on the one hand, Scott Boras is the agent for Kyler Murray. Scott Boras is his agent, and Kyler Murray has signed a $4.66 million signing bonus. I don't think Scott Boras wants to give back that money. If Kyler Murray does want to get out of his commitment, he does have to give back the $4.66 million. And here's the thing for the A's who get screwed. The A's will not get a compensatory pick, because usually if you draft a guy like a J.D. Drew, Mark Appel type of person who doesn't sign, then you get that pick next year and the next pick in the first round. Well, since he actually did sign, the A's wouldn't get that pick. They'd probably plead a hardship on that. Not really worried about that right now. People will say, why would you, when you're that small and you're a first-round pick in baseball, and baseball obviously is the sport where not only your career lasts the longest, you make more money per year than any other sport on average. I mean, think about this. Kyler Murray, with his signing bonus, has already made more than the average NFL career with his baseball signing bonus.